Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Memorial Day, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. We hope that you're out there enjoying sunshine, barbecues, and fun wherever in the world you are. Today, I'm very excited to have with us Pete Zavalis. Am I getting that right?
Zavalis.
I know, it's that silent Z or T. I'm not sure which one's which. And he's the Senior Vice President of Challenger, Gray, and Christmas, a.k.a. known as the Outplacement Guy. He's a strong consultant and business developer with a diverse industry background. He develops strong strategic relationships and partnership to provide effective human resource solutions. His specialties are outplacement, leadership development, executive coaching, assessment, retention, team alignment, and mergers and acquisitions. He's great at helping organizations execute strategy through their people for the better business results. Outplacement is a support service provided by responsible organizations to support individuals who are exiting the business to help former employees transition to new jobs and help them reorient themselves into the job market. Challenger, Gray, and Christmas, the founders of the industry in 1966, provides the outplacement services, which are paid for by the former employer. So I think it's a great service. And I know you and I were talking.
I do.
Well, it's wonderful because I think so many people feel so lost and distraught when they find out that they're being riffed or outsourced or whatever that might look like. And I think it's wonderful that your organization comes in and you provide moral support, education, and offer insights and even career strategies on how to make their next move, correct?
Absolutely. It's interesting because a lot of the time the people, they don't know what they don't know. They think they, you know, can do this on their own. And they can, of course. It's just going to take them longer usually.
Yeah, I think that it's like having a coach behind you saying, you can do this, and guiding you, and you got to throw the ball a little right.
I often refer, well, our coaches are called coaches, and, you know, making that comparison to, I have folks say, when you, in your youth, what sport did you play? And kind of relate it to coaching. And it's not good to have your spouse or significant other be that person because they love you and they want you to be happy.
Now, dangerous combination.
Dangerous combination. Your coach might like you, but they want you, they're there to push you to succeed. And that's the difference between liking you and wanting you to be happy. And that model works.
So how did you become an outplacement executive with this company?
Well, once upon a time, it actually happened to me. Well, it's happened twice, but I was that guy. I was a finance guy for Hughes Aircraft Company back in 1982. We actually worked on some components of the B-2 bomber program, and they were supposed to make 182 planes, and they decided 20 would be fine. So me and a few thousand of my friends were laid off, and I went through this process, and I was like, wow, this is pretty cool, pretty neat, great stuff.
Not what you would think. Pretty cool and pretty neat is not the first thought somebody
would
have.
Well, I'd gone through my undergraduate work, the stuff I learned they should teach it in college. It should be taught because there's some real important skills that people will need. And statistically, I look at my daughter, for example. My dad, you know, had two jobs in his career. Mm-hmm. I've had, say, eight or so. My daughter... my daughters and son, in their career, they're probably going to have 14 jobs in their career, and their statistical probability of getting laid off is 100%. So
wow.
It should be taught. It's not, but good companies provide it to their exiting employees.
So how did you make the transition? After you had the experience of being laid off, you thought, hey, this seems cool and interesting. How did you come to work in the industry?
Well, I went into sales and was very successful. From a finance guy. probably one of the best managers I had ever worked for in my life, a guy named Dan Williams. He said, I want you to come work for me again in Los Angeles for one of our competitors at the time. And he told me about it, and I said, sign me up. I'll see you on Monday, because I already had experience with a fantastic leader. And then I had already gone through the process, and I was a believer. Because I had done it myself, and that's what got me into the industry 17 years ago.
Wow. So 17 years in the industry, I'm sure you've seen and heard it all.
Pretty much.
I just was talking to a client today, and it was so funny. I couldn't even believe it. So this gentleman is commuting 2 hours each way to the job. And he told myself, my associates, the commute is awful. It's horrendous. I can't do the job, or I can't do the commute. And he went into interview for a billing job. He was a slam dunk for it.
Right.
And in the interview, no matter how much we coached him, when they said, oh, why are you looking to leave? He said, oh, I don't want to be a biller. I'm like, but the commute, you said 10 times the commute was awful. And the staff, it would have just taken that one extra prep time or that one extra time role playing with him to maybe get that out of his head. But it's probably good he was authentic about it, because it wouldn't have been the right match. But
sure.
I think he doesn't. The unfortunate thing is he wanted the job. And so it's you just sit here and laugh and go, oh, my gosh, you can lead a horse to water. But you can't be a bug in their ear in the interview, no matter how much they would enjoy that. So.
Yeah, I think my daughter's interviewing tomorrow, whopping 18 years old, and I think I'm more nervous than she is. But she is being prepped by a great job coach, probably in about an hour and a half.
Awesome, perfect. Well, it's good, and we wish your daughter all the best of luck, and I'm sure you guys have great resources to help her.
Oh, absolutely.
So what are the most important things that you look at when you're trying to help somebody get employed after they've been outsourced or laid off?
Well, it's a combination, I mean, of their whole strategy and the component parts. So, I mean, what we first do is we just have a team of writers to do their resume for them. So, for example, if they have one, our writers can make it better. If they don't have one, we just build them one from scratch. But then that resume, it's just a marketing tool. So now what do you do with it? So they go through some one-on-one training with one of our coaches. And what's nice about one-on-one is, versus, say, a room full of people, you get that. You talk about classroom size. There's nothing better than one-on-one. So you really meet them where they are. There's some people, like you, for example, if you were looking, you're going to be great at interviewing and talk. But so getting that, whatever it is you need the most help in. And then, you know, nowadays LinkedIn is mandatory, so making that look good. And then it was interesting. I was talking to a gal yesterday, and she sent me over a resume to take a look at. And when I looked at it, she was an assistant to a CEO, and one of the things she listed, you know, arranges the travel. And that was her line. That was her bullet point. And I said, well, can you kind of expand on that? And for the one guy, she said, well, no, actually, there's three folks, you know, three senior people. And I said, well, how often do they travel? Every single week. I said, wait a second, there's 52 weeks in a year, so, you know, you're talking 50 travels in a year? Oh, yeah, and some of it's international.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's 150 things you're arranging just as a component of what you do, and it handles international travel and blah, blah, blah. And I said, that's more than some travel agencies, and you're saying that's a piece of what you do. I said, yes. I said, you need to add all those numbers, 150 travels, international, blah, blah, blah. Then the other thing and there's one line that just said trade show.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, you did a trade show. Well, tell me more about it. Well, I flew out 18 people from all over the country. We had an entire room in the Bellagio, and
wow,
like 18 people and that room. So I'm just guessing, because we've worked trade shows in Vegas, and that's probably about $400,000 all in, right? Oh, yeah, that's about right.
Managed a budget of $400,000.
Managed a budget of $400,000, put that in. And she's like, well, I didn't think about that. But it's those little things that make your resume really pop. And, you know, when you talk about it, because as we successful people have this tendency to, when we've accomplished something, you kind of throw it in your mental attic and forget about it. I mean, the real example is that is your to-do list. You literally crumple it up and throw it in the trash. But everything you talk about in job search is about past performance, because it's a predictor of future performance. So that's another thing, too, getting these folks to just bring all those great stories they have and talk about them well.
Yeah, I think what you said is so important, because we do look at so many resumes, and I'm sure in your career you've seen tens of thousands of resumes, as have I or any employer out there, and they make your brain hurt just looking at them. But if you have something that's easy to read and has bullets and clear information and results that you produce, that actually, you'll go from skimming a resume to you actually might pause and read a line of it. I don't know about you, but I skim.
Oh, no. I skim. If you don't catch me, well, I call the first half of page one is the hot zone.
Exactly.
And if you don't catch me in the hot zone, you're done, because I've got 40 more resumes I'm flipping through as I, you know, toss. Well, there's the callback, maybe I'll call back. And then there's the trash can, and that maybe I call back ends up in the trash anyway. So you get that one little stack, and you know, what can you do to be that person that captures them on page one, first half, that hot zone, a great summary of who you are, and just get read.
So good question that I get asked a lot. Is it the highest and best good of the person to include their education on that first half of the top page of their first
page
of their resume?
No, because then you flip to the last page and look at the bottom. That's where education is. So I literally go first half of page one, flip to what's usually the second page to the bottom, and look for the education.
That's such a great point that you raise, because sometimes it can take up so much real estate space. I think we've got to look at the resume like real estate. And if you only have that first half of the first page, you have a very limited amount of time to capture their attention. And if they're already going to scroll to the bottom and see if you have a bachelor's degree or a higher level education, I think that's a great piece of advice.
Well, what you put up at the top says, this is the most important thing about me. And if it's my daughter, whose education's pretty great, her work experience is virtually non-existent, maybe that is important. But, you know, mid-career folks, you and I, because you catch them on page one, which gets them to flip to the second page, in some cases three. That's another thing of controversy, you know, what's the right length?
Hmm.
And my dad, who had two jobs eons ago, one page is fine. And people still today say, oh, I'm trying to get it to one page. Don't bother, you know, get it to two. And if it makes sense, you can go beyond that. I mean, I had a PhD scientist from Allergan, had written so many articles. He had a six-pager, but it made sense because he had to quote all these wonderful articles he had written. So six pages make sense for him, where normally you say two is about normal these days.
I think that's pretty accurate, because in the IT world, in the medical world, you're right. They have all these articles or different things that they've written or things that they've included that you do want to showcase. You know, for IT professionals, they might have lists and lists of certifications where you or I wouldn't include that in our resumes. But I think where people can get in trouble is the average Joe, who might not have a senior level PhD or something else that's necessary to, you know, necessitate a 12-page resume, which I would never recommend that somebody does a 12-page resume, but it does happen.
Yeah.
I think two pages is definitely safe.
Yeah.
And so how far back should somebody go on their resume?
It depends. If it's relevant, I go back to 1984. Now, on one hand, it dates me, but on the other hand, because it was finance accounting and it was Hughes Aircraft Company, it's a brand name. And it tells them that I understand math and economics. So I know that the language of business, I know finance, even though I'm in a sales role. So it makes sense. Now, in my youth, when I said Hughes, there used to be a market called Hughes Market. So when I work for Hughes. Oh, the market? No, the aircraft company. But if I had worked for the market, I'd probably leave that off. Or if I needed space. So if I need space, so it depends. If it's relevant, if it's a name brand, so if you're talking Disney or Arthur Andersen or, you know, big names that are leave it on there. If it gets too lengthy, then, you know, you get to where you kind of redesign the thing and, you know, go to older ones and just say, you know, also these companies and not necessarily, you know, the dates, just in this time frame. In the olden days, I did this stuff.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that it's important to highlight, and it all depends on, for me, I think your resume should go back a little bit further. A, if you don't have stability, say you had a job that was from 10 years ago where you were there for 5 or 10 years, and that shows longevity, and maybe you've had 4 or 5 jobs since then it might be advantageous, even though it might date you, to include the other stuff to make it look like you're a loyal person and that you do have longevity in a certain place. Or like you said, if you have a big name that you don't otherwise have on your resume, include it. It definitely doesn't hurt to
do
that.
It's interesting because I did 9 years at Hughes Aircraft, and now a Challenger, I'm 10. But in between, I had some of those ones and twos that it wasn't a good fit. But that's to show that stability. And until I kind of beat my record here at Challenger.
What would you say, given how important the real estate is on that first half of the first page? Obviously, if you're a recent graduate or you're in college like your daughter, if you have a great GPA in a good school, or even, you know, you're a recent grad, maybe do include your degree at the top if you don't have relevant work experience.
Yeah.
But for all other professionals out there, what would be the best thing to put on that top half of the first page?
Well, a summary of who you are. So something that's powerful and impactful that will have some highlights of accomplishments. So the thing is, you want to be remembered and you want to differentiate yourself. So there's things that don't differentiate you at all. You know, honest, trustworthy, you know, these words and 15 years experience, 20 years experience. I have a networking group, the largest one in California. If anyone wants to go on LinkedIn and join Challenger Networking Group on LinkedIn, I queried a room full of 100 some odd people. So who, you know, raise your hand if you've got, you know, 10 years, hands went up, 20 years, hands stayed up. Most people do. So it's how do you build that summary of who you are that is going to capture someone? And then more often than not, I prefer chronological, as I would imagine you do too.
You mean reverse chronological, right? Starting with the most recent job and going backwards?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the most recent backwards. I like that chronology as opposed to, what's the other
functional
one?
Functional.
They just confuse me.
Yeah.
If it works. So if you're going for that position that's very similar, and then, you know, a brief, you know, your title, tenure, and then if the company's not a name where people, it's a name brand, a little description of what the company does. So my daughter did a little internship at a biopharma company, cool little description of what the company's about, and then some of the things she did, she spliced and duplicated human DNA. So
put
bright kid, but did some cool stuff. Put those kind of things in there, but so get the most recent. Again, I prefer reverse chronological.
What are your thoughts about including LinkedIn, your URL on your resume? Is that something you would recommend?
Can't hurt.
Yeah, I think
they're going to look you up anyway. I mean, my name's weird, so
yeah,
TZAV. Yeah, I pop up, but you know, Steve Jones, or there's a lot of them, and you know, how connected are they? So if they're going to try and search you. So you may as well just put it on there and make it look good.
And direct them.
And then direct them there, because they're going to look at it. So I say go for it. It's on, well, when I send you an email, it's on my bottom of my email signature.
And how important is it to have an appropriate email address or phone number?
I told you this story. I was doing a, you know, kind of a little presentation to a group of college students years ago. And you know, I kind of come into the class and, you know, wrote my name on the board. So if you need to reach me, but then I wrote my email address. I wrote bootycall420 back then it was Yahoo. I don't think it was Gmail yet. So, cause that recruiter friends kind of joke about some of the email addresses. So anyway, the kids in the class started, you know, squirming and chuckling in their seat. And, then you know, I said, "Well, what's going on? Why is everyone giggling here?" And I said, "Oh, the email address. Everything matters. Everything matters. So down to a professional email address, to your LinkedIn, to not having silly stuff on your Facebook. If it's easily, social media these days, you can blow it." And I've literally, I have a couple friends, recruiters at big entertainment companies out here. They swap all the silly, crazy stuff that gets sent to them that immediately, like, and that is an actual email address. I'm not bright enough to make that up.
My favorite was sexylegs69 at Yahoo that somebody had sent to a VP of HR for a high-level position. And it's like, how does it not occur to somebody? With all the emails, I get it maybe 20 years ago when you had to pay for the one AOL address that you had to pay a monthly premium.
Right.
But you have so many free webmail options nowadays that you could just create. Jennifer.k.hill.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm the same. It's funny, too. Even your address. So if you're concerned about your age, don't have an AOL account, because you can tell. So I'm 51 and I have sbcglobal.net. So if you're a Yahoo SBC, you're in that 40-something, 50-something range. If you're AOL, you're retired, and you're hip, or you're, now my wife's even older than me, but you know, she's got the Gmail thing going on, but. There's things that kind of, or some, you know.
I would have never thought of that.
AOL, you're retired, mid-career, 40-something, 50-something. You it's like your Verizon, Cox, SBC Global, and then younger is Gmail.
Wow, so that's a good point.
If you want to come off younger, go get a Gmail. I have one. I still use my old one, so.
Well, I'm going to diverge here for a moment because you touched on an important point. Do you think people discriminate in interviews based on age?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's illegal.
I live in a little bubble of white light and sunshine and unicorns where I like to believe that of all the clients, because I've placed people in their 80s and I've placed people in their teens, so it's run the gamut of all the different places, and I often place people in their 60s. I don't know if it's different for me because I own a legal recruiting firm, and that's why maybe I don't see as much age discrimination. What percentage of companies out there would you say discriminate?
I don't know if I want to call it discrimination. Our firm, we deal with senior executives, and the folks and the coaches and the people that have had relationships. Like, I'm 51. I'm a youngster. My boss, my counterpart in Texas, he's in his 60s. My counterpart in North Carolina is in his 70s. They don't want to retire. They're having fun. We really enjoy what we do. It's a great company. It's a great, I mean, I'm going to retire here if I ever retire. So in our firm, I mean, we have younger folks, but that's kind of the culture where you need some experience. Or, I mean, one of my folks, and she's just amazing, and she's young, and she kicks butt. Cindy Cervone.
Shout out to Cindy.
Shout out to Cindy. Give her some props. But, you know, I always say, you know, Google and Yahoo, Google and whatever, they're not hiring me. You know, they're hiring my daughter. And that's fine. I don't know that I'd want to work there. I toured a bunch of, you know, tech companies in the Bay Area, and, you know, it's all the concrete floor and the open ceilings, and there's dogs running around, and there's booze everywhere, and there's always a ping pong table.
Oh, totally. I was just at my husband's company, and the same thing. They have the ping pong ball table and the dogs.
Ping pong.
For beer pong, that's what it's for.
It's not for ping pong.
They have to be able to play beer pong on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday,
Friday. And I was sitting there, and it's just, and the amount of booze was more than the bar downstairs. I mean, there was just kegs, and I don't know if I would want to work there. So
have to find your niche.
You find your niche. You'll find the place. And I don't know that it's that big of an issue, because you're going to find the right place.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. It's disheartening on my end because I hear people who negative self-talk. Oh, I'm too old. Oh, I'm not pretty enough, not thin enough, not tall enough, whatever it is.
There's always something. I'm too fat. I'm too thin. I'm too white. I'm too black. I'm too whatever. And I say, no, you're not.
You're going to find the perfect place. My favorite story was years ago when I first started recruiting, about 14, 15 years ago. There was a job seeker I met who was probably 100 to 200 pounds overweight, had a moo-moo, two front black teeth, and frizzy hair. And I met her, and by God, she was the best damn paralegal I'd ever interviewed in my life. And when I called my client, I said, listen, you are about to meet somebody who is not a Barbie doll. She is awesome. She has phenomenal skills, and she will rock your world. And to this day, it's one of the only occasions where they offered her the job on the spot in the middle of the interview. And a lot of the things, the accoutrements that some companies might value, but to that particular company, all they cared about is somebody with extraordinary skills.
Yeah.
And I think it's just important to keep that in mind and not beat yourself up or try to fit a mold and to be you and do you in a professional way.
Yeah, I agree.
Have you seen that movie, though, Get the Job? I think it's with Bryan Cranston and, Anna Kendricks. I just was watching it the other night with my husband, but it did kind of crack me up based on what we're talking about, because Bryan Cranston is the dad in that, obviously the guy from Breaking Bad, and he gets laid off, and his son's trying to find a job because he gets laid off, and so the dad is like dyeing his beard black and trying to do everything he can so he can look younger to get a job, and his son comes home complaining to him like, oh, they want me to wear a suit and tie, and this is such BS, dude. And the dad is like, you little ungrateful prick, go out there and wear a suit, and I would give anything to have a job. And it's just so funny, the different mentalities of people job hunting in the market.
Oh, yeah. No, it's too funny. Well, I always get quoted as that other movie.
Up in the Air. Up in the Air with George Clooney. Yeah. So not all guys who do that are bad.
No. There are some correlations, and actually if you Google my name and do images, the third images is a scene. I get quoted as being the guy so often. But it is loosely based on what we do. It's just explaining outplacement, where we help these people find a job. Takes too long to... So they just made it the guy who fires people. I don't fire people.
You help them get jobs, which is a very valuable thing.
I'm the good guy, not the bad guy.
So tell me, how do you answer the question? This is the one that always trips job seekers up, whether they're going in for an interview or they're at a networking event. How do you answer, tell me about yourself? Everybody loves that one.
You got to keep it short and sweet. It's got to be 30 seconds. And it's just a, hey, I'm Pete. I'm with Challenger Green Christmas. And in terms of the, just make it short, sweet about you. But it has to be situational in terms of if it's in an interview, it's how does it add value? So business developer, top salesperson in the world, you know, 3 years running, something like that. If it's in an instance where it's in networking, it's a brief history of who you are. And then I think the other thing, too, is, caring about the other person and then, like, tell me about yourself. Is there anything I can do to help you? Being a giver, I think a lot of times folks just like, what's in it for me? And if you're out there just to help, then eventually it'll come back. So I think not just, hey, this is me. Let's learn more about you, listening.
Yeah, listening is really great. There was something wonderful I learned from one of my teachers recently, Alison Armstrong, and she said, what do we listen for? Do we listen to learn? Do we listen to speak, to get our point across? And I think it's really important to listen, whether you're networking or whether you're in an interview. If we can listen to learn, and it takes a certain type of listening to shut down that little voice going, wah, 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 in the back of your head.
Just listening to for where you can kind of get your point in next. It's like, no, just listen and learn.
And see what matters. And you'll often find out some of the best interviewers in my experience, they'll gain little nuggets of information just from something subtle the person shares who's interviewing them, and then they can tie it back to that point of what really matters or what's important to that person. And I think it can be valuable.
Well, the best interviews where I've been interviewed is where the other person is talking more. And so you can start, well, first you have to have done your homework so you know about the organization. And in this day and age, even if you know about the person interviewing you, can you get to that? And then learn more about them and the organization, but just demonstrating that, A, you know, you've done the research, and it's easy enough with, you know, Google and other research tools to learn about the company. And then the individual to learn about them, like, hey, we both went to, you know, insert college name here.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. But yeah.
So what are your thoughts on whether or not it's appropriate to bring up personal information in your tell me about yourself, your three kids, your dog, your love of hockey? Is that appropriate or inappropriate to share in an interview in a tell me about yourself situation?
I think it is. Interesting story. There was a, and it goes against all the rules of resumes.
I completely disagree, so I'm curious to hear what you have to say.
And this gal had put on her resume just a little gym rat. Gym rat.
Like retail therapy.
Yeah, like this workout fiend. And then went on the interview, and they talked about working out. They connected on that and got the job, of course. But there's that thing to connect about. But it depends when how personal you get. But, yeah, it's, you know, some little tidbit that's interesting. Oh, yeah, and then, you know, blah, 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 and love surfing.
It's fascinating to say that because my rule of thumb, whenever I'm coaching a job seeker who's going in and people say, well, Jennifer, should I bring up my love of painting or cooking or whatever it might be in the interview? My thought process is to look for indicators. In that person's case, my experience is they happen to luck out that interviewer was into gym stuff, which is probably why they wanted to meet with them in the first place, arguably. My rule of thumb is if you're in somebody's office and you see any indicators in the person's office, whether it's a cookbook, a picture of kids, or a charity that they might be involved in. Or I had a guy one time go in to meet with the general counsel, and he noticed that the general counsel had his favorite sports team memorabilia all around the office.
Yeah.
So they happened to start shooting the shit, pardon my French, about sports.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, he was hired because they just had that automatic rapport. But do I think it's appropriate to bring up that you're a fan of the Ducks or the Dodgers or whatever it is, you know, a la carte in the interview with no indication that that person is
interested?
There should
be some sort of indication, yeah.
Because you never know, too. You might bring up the fact that you're a Dodgers fan and they're a Yankees fan, and then you lose the job.
Yeah, it's like, oh, forget, get out of here.
Yeah, we're on rival teams, dude. We can't hire you.
Yeah, it's never going to happen. Yeah.
So it sounds to me like you're saying, you're telling me about yourself. You can add personal elements where applicable. And so you're okay with having that sort of thing on the resume then?
I wasn't for the longest time.
Okay.
And I've been converted.
Have you read Liz Ryan's book?
Nope.
We had her on the show. It was the last weekend or the last Monday in January. Mm-hmm. And her book is all about, I think it's Reinvention Roadmap is what it's called. She and I talked about it on the show. I completely hated and disagreed with everything she wrote back when she first came in the market in the job hunting field back about 3 years ago, because for her it was all about keeping it personal, really sharing things about yourself rather than having it be a rote, nothing personal, nothing about you resume or anything like that. And she did turn my mind around. I think that we're in a new phase of job hunting mm-hmm. that hasn't existed before, where things like maybe including hobbies on a resume or personal interests,
yeah.
where before it would have been completely disregarded and unacceptable, is opening doors in ways it might not have in the past.
Yeah, a friend of mine, he's one of my guest speakers, a guy named Hank Blank, marketing guru.
Great name, Hank Blank.
HankBlank.com. Guy's amazing. And yeah, he's the guy that converted me. And
really?
I believe I'm a believer now. I'm with you, man. And it took me probably 14 years of my 17. I get it. And then when you do go into that office and notice that, oh, you know, the huge marlin on the wall. Oh, you like fishing?
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Where do you fish at?
Yeah, that's a obvious sign.
Yes. So I think it's reading your audience in all situations.
Well, earlier I said differentiation. So if there's a way to differentiate or connect, at the end of the day, if you get the gig, you're going to live with these people for, 8 to 12 hours a day, 5 to 6 days a week. So having that connection is good. So
I think that's a great point. Now, I know another tricky question that people sometimes get asked in the interview is, why did you leave your last job?
Oh, I like to tell the truth because it's easy to remember. So tell the truth. And in my case, the vast majority is it's based on a strict management decision. The company had a reduction in force and my job was affected. But while I was there, I did all these wonderful things, which is why you should hire me today. So some response like that. So the folks, again, that come through my program, the vast majority have been laid off for no fault of their own. Now, I've been fired. My daughter revels in the fact that Daddy got fired from Burger King.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's awesome.
So how would you handle that if somebody gets terminated? Because that's a little bit more sticky. It's easy enough to say, oh, I was laid off or I moved because of X or Y.
Telling the truth. And it depends. It's very situational. Like, if you stole or you beat somebody up, you've got a problem.
Yeah, bigger
and
problem.
You got a bigger problem than just like, and how do you make that go away? And unfortunately, my rule of thumb is tell the truth. It's going to be very difficult. But if it's been a bad fit. So for me, when I go back to when I was a finance guy, I kind of moved up in the organization and ended up in finance. And I just didn't enjoy it. It was a terrible fit. And I didn't enjoy going to work. Like today, I love going to work. It's awesome. My earlier degree, my master's is in organizational development, so I've done enough of that psychobabble analysis on myself to know why these things energize me and why I didn't really enjoy that. So talking about, leaving that, had I not been laid off, I certainly would have left. And because, I was just unhappy and would have had a story around it wasn't a good fit, I did it, and I want to move on to something I'm more passionate about. So, and I've worked for people that are just horrible leaders. I mean, just two, actually, that I'm not going to say, but they both have the same first name.
to look at his LinkedIn. No, I'm just
kidding. Yeah, they were just, the organization was, leadership is really important, and how you manage people, how you inspire the organization. I just couldn't work there and split, and it was a bad fit. So that's the other thing too to talk about. And you have to say it nicely that I didn't fit in the organization. It was time to move on. So now,
if you had somebody, say for example, who was yeller or screamer or was caustic or verbally abusive, mm-hmm. would you still say the same thing? Would you still say, "Hey, it just wasn't a good fit," or is it ever appropriate to go into more depth?
I don't like to dwell on the past, so I'm probably, you know, the guy, I mean, I mentioned.
Who was a special person.
Who was a very special person. I won't get into too many details on why it was a living hell.
Tell me how you really feel, Pete.
But yeah, it's just, you know, it's in the past, and, you know, I wish him the best. And I'm done. So, I mean, I wouldn't really get into it. I don't think there's any benefit
to badmouth someone
ever. So even in life, like this, you know, you just don't have to deal with those people. So the beauty of what I do is the relationships I have with my clients. You know, I can't go into an organization and say, hey, you need to lay somebody off. You have to develop a relationship over time. They understand we're the Nordstroms of the industry. We do great work. When they need me, they call me. But the people that don't like me, which is hard to believe, there's some out there.
I know. Somebody doesn't like you, Pete. That's unbelievable.
And the feeling might be mutual. I'm not calling on them. So, you know, it's we don't spend time together. And the clients, and now they're friends, that I do work with, it's great. I mean, I have a fantastic time doing what I'm doing, surrounding myself with the people I like, respect, and want to spend time with. So getting those people behind you, and I don't need to dwell on why I don't like this person or get along with that person. Just focus on these awesome people that are in my life, happen to be my clients too, and friends.
That's great. And so it sounds to me like you're saying, you know, just work with people who you like, and mm-hmm. sometimes there are going to be people who you might not like in business.
Yeah.
And I think the lesson there is, to a certain extent, we can remove ourselves from people in situations mm-hmm. who are negative or toxic to us. But if you really can't remove yourself enough where you still have to interact with them and it takes a toll on your well-being and your happiness,
yeah.
it's not the right job for you anyways.
Yeah, totally. Well, and hiring managers, the folks that are doing the hiring, they've been there. We've all kind of been there. You've worked for that person. It is like, ugh, you know, shoot me. And then you've worked for that person. Hopefully you've had, you know, wonderful mentor, life-changing boss that you've worked for in your career. And if you haven't, they're out there. You will, hopefully. And that they are out there. So they've had that experience probably with both of those people, that fantastic person and that not-so-fantastic person.
Yeah, and I think you got to take the good with the bad, but realize that you don't have to stay in the bad longer than is necessary.
Yeah.
Be accountable and responsible, and if there's nothing that you can do to better the situation, then being laid off might be a best-case scenario.
Oh, yeah. No, for me, it was awesome.
That's great.
The first time.
The
second time was a little different. It wasn't as awesome.
Yeah, well, it all led you to where you are, which now you have a job that you love going to work every day.
Well, the first time I was single, me and my best friend ended up going backpacking through Europe. You know, the second time around, I'm married, stay-at-home mom, 3 kids. So I came home and said, yeah, I got laid off. And she's like, it'll be fine. And what was funny, I said, well, you know, I'm thinking about it. I think me and my buddy Dante should probably go backpacking through Europe. And she's like, no.
It was good luck last time.
Yeah,
you should do it again.
Time. She's like, no, you're going to get a job. I said, yes, dear. So the boss won on that one.
Good husband. So any other tips for tricky situations or questions that people might have to answer in an interview that you would recommend?
No, I just be strategic about it. And there's little things, the beautiful resume that earlier I talked about. The best written resumes are by finance and accounting, because they quantify everything with numbers. So if in your accomplishments, you can quantify that thing with some sort of number, like to just add emphasis to that or scope around that thing you did, that example I used earlier. And then in going to your network, which is where 80% of jobs are found, when you say, hey, I'm looking for a job in the greater Los Angeles area, great, if I hear about anything, I'll let you know. That's kind of useless. But when you say, hey, I'm looking for this job, this is what I do, and oh, by the way, I made this list of 40 companies I'm really interested in working for. Is there anyone you could introduce me to? Yeah, I know people at 3 of those companies. Let's do it. So that little bit of homework that you've done, because it's your job search, it's not theirs, that just moves things along quicker. You think about your current job, whatever that is. You're working at it 40, 50 hours a week, and you're good at it. Now take yourself out of that, doing this new thing, job search, which is basically sales. And it's not fun. It's uncomfortable. And you need to commit that time to getting in front of people, you know, doing research, all this stuff. And if you think about it, it took you 40 or 50 hours a week to do something that you were good at, and now you're doing something you're bad at, and think, oh, I'm going to golf 2 days during the week, and you're going to get there. It's going to take you longer, but when you take it really seriously and treat it as a job, you will land.
So. It's all about perspective, I think. If you have the right mental attitude, I used to tell people when I would do career consulting that you want to spend 40 hours a week looking for a job the same way that you would if you were working full-time. And those are the people who within less than typically 1 month are landed in their dream job versus the people who kind of sporadically, I can't, it's hard, there's no jobs out there, nobody likes me.
You only need one.
Yeah, you just gotta, but it's the rule of numbers, though, too. If you're just sitting on your couch and you're not going to networking events and you don't have a LinkedIn and you're not out submitting your resume, you're never going to get hired if you're only submitting 5 or 6 resumes a week.
Oh, yeah, no, it is a numbers game. And it just drives me nuts. Like, oh, there's nothing out there. You know, and the other, oh, I'm working, I'm doing boom, 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 I'm busy, I'm, you know. And I see it every day. I mean, I do this for a living. So I see the ones that are working it and they land quickly, and the ones that don't. And I mean, I'm that guy where, I mean, I'll fix things around the house that aren't even broken. So I'm very easily distractible. But to just have that discipline to make this job search your job and treat it as such. And it's a job you're not good at. You shouldn't be good at it. And it's not fun. I hate looking for a job. I think that's why I have so much empathy around this, because I have such utter loathing for job searching.
I think many of our listeners do as well.
Hate it. Yeah, that's why. But I mean, my best part is when someone, like, I get the message, hey, I just got my new gig, it's wonderful, and thanks so much for the help. Yeah, it's a blast.
You know, I just thought of something, too, that I think is important for the audience to understand about job hunting in this market, like you and I were talking about. Mm-hmm. It is an employee market right now, which is awesome. That means that there are more jobs than there are people out there looking. Mm-hmm. Statistics or whatever aside, there just seem to be more jobs than there are people. It's a good and a bad thing, because one of the dangers of this situation that I've seen happen when we're in a high market like this is that sometimes people burn their bridges. They get lots of multiple offers and then they don't call people back, or they're lazy about the way that they respond, or they get really entitled and ask for exorbitant amounts of money with not based on anything.
Right.
Just because, hey, it's a hot market and I'm going to go for it.
Yeah.
But the warning I'll give to people out there is it does catch up with you, because God forbid you hit another dip in the market or any sort of slow time in job hunting and you're out in the market looking. All the people who you mistreated, the companies, it gets out there. People know about how other people treat one another.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, and statistically, it's everything cyclical. So kind of the ups and downs. So, you know, where the recession's over, but I'm surprised that we haven't already headed into the next recession, because it's past due. And so, you know, doing these things, treating people well, like you talked about.
Build your network, treat people kindly.
Yeah, it's not like, hey, I'm laid off, let me start doing all this stuff now. That's the other thing, too. You're going to be in this life of yours for a very long time, and in business for a very long time. And spending that, you know, going out to lunch with someone you don't work with once a week, once a month, like doing that stuff to maintain your network, going to these things while you're working, in the event, you know, by no fault of your own, your job goes away, but you are networked in your area of expertise. Your husband is tech guy, you know, or if it's human resources or whatever that might be, but being out there and have people at other companies know you. And I love getting calls by recruiters and say, hey, I'm really flattered. Thank you so much, but this, you know, I'm happy where I am. Let me introduce you to someone else that might be a good match for that role. So I love those calls. And the reason I get those calls is because I'm out there doing this. And, you know, if something horrible happens, which I don't want to, because I already told you I want to retire here, if I get that call, then it's let's talk.
Yeah, but you have a network to support you. That's exactly what happened with my husband. When he finished one of his last projects, mm-hmm. he was like, it was so funny. He was like looking at the most bizarre jobs on Indeed and sales and different things. I was like, honey, you don't like hotels at all. He was like looking at a job at the Four Seasons. I said, have you reached out to your network? well, no, I don't want people to know I'm available. It wasn't that. I was just like, you know, people get weird about sharing with their network that they're available. I said, honey, post on LinkedIn and say you just wrapped up a project and that you're available for work. And at the end of that week, my husband had 3 job offers, including the one he has now at his dream job. And so that's why you want to stay in touch. And that whole time, whether you're doing project work or working, always just keep your network up.
Well, what's funny, too, is since the Great Recession, the stigma behind being laid off is almost non-existent. So it was interesting when my dad, he worked for GE, and then he was laid off because he didn't want to relocate, and then he ended up at Hughes Aircraft Company. And, you know, this is, God, I don't even know if it's the 80s or whenever the heck it was, a long time ago. There was a stigma behind being laid off.
Yep.
And, oh, what did you do? Absolutely nothing. It's not here. It's in Minneapolis. You know, it's gone. But today, I don't know anybody who hasn't been laid off. You know, and it's when I talk to folks, it's like, oh, it's not. It's how many times? So that stigma's gone, and you know, the instant you know you're out there and you're looking, you know, if you get laid off, is no, you need to like.
It's acceptable.
It's totally acceptable. It's.
And people want to help. I think that, like you said, you have a lot of empathy given what you went through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's very true of the rest of the market out there. So many people have had friends, lovers, husbands, you know, family members who have been laid off that were all committed to helping one another find a job to kind of get through it together.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, on that note, Pete, it has been such a delight to have you on the show today. And if people wanted to look up your company, say there's any corporations out there that might want to hire you, where would they find you?
Websites, ChallengerGray.com, G-R-A-Y, so ChallengerGray.com. Me, Pete Savalas, so the last name.
You may want to spell it.
yeah, it's Pete, P-E-T-E, and then the last name is T as in Tom, Z as in Zebra, A-V-A-L-A-S, at ChallengerGray.com. Or on LinkedIn, I'm Pete Savalas. And it was spelled with a T-Z, so I think there's only one in the universe.
Yes, you're very lucky.
Yeah.
Took me 10 years to get on page one of Google with the name Jennifer Hill.
I'm on page one. Yeah, you Google me, you get a whole,
You get a lot of information and pictures of up in the air.
You do, yes.
That's awesome. Well, it's been awesome to have you here, Pete. Again, for any of our listeners who may have missed any part of the show, you can always find the archive of the show on the LA Talk Radio website, typically within a couple of minutes after the show is complete. Or feel free to subscribe. You can subscribe for free on iTunes at Get Yourself the Job. We encourage you to please rate us, leave any reviews. Any feedback you have is always helpful. Or if you want to engage more and suggest guests to us or have any feedback on any of the shows, you can always post comments or share information on our Get Yourself the Job Facebook page. So thank you so much, Pete. I hope everybody has a wonderful rest of your Memorial Day, and we appreciate you tuning in.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.